interesting, busy.
Yeah, I believe it.
I was just a hair away from being ordered into 14-day quarantine just like 30 minutes ago, and then it all changed. Yeah, then it all changed. It went from don't worry about it to don't come to work tomorrow until further notice to 14-day quarantine, and then they undid the whole thing and said, no, you know what? You're good. Go to work tomorrow. Wow.
Jeez, what a roller coaster.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
Tripping out on it.
Yeah, for real. Well, I don't want to waste time. I know time is money for both of us, you know, like capitalize on it while we got. And I know you've been up early. So, you know, I've already started recording right now. So
yeah,
I hope you don't mind. But yeah, for everybody listening, welcome to episode 12 of the Reptile Room podcast. If you can't tell already, we're joined by Dan Maleri of DM Exotics. And Dan is heavily integrated in the reptile scene, most notably in the Southern California scene, as well as the import-export side of things. And you do a lot of fantastic YouTube blogging, and your animals are always top-notch and somebody who I've always looked up to and bought, you know, several snakes from. And just, you know, you're a great model of how to do things right and ethically in the community with your own unique spin on it. So I was really, really happy to get you on tonight. In fact, Andy and I, who can't be with us tonight, Andy and I were trying to set it up where we would have you be the first guest on the show. And it just, you know, it didn't happen, unfortunately, but needless to say, definitely glad to have you here talking with me.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
So, you know, what I like to, I know every podcast likes to ask like how you got started and things like that. And we could get into that if you want. But I know you've been around for, you know, quite a long time and you've seen a lot of things come and go. So, you know, maybe, do like a quick rundown of like how you got to where you are today, I suppose, for everybody who, you know, if nobody knows who you are, if they've been living under a rock, I see.
Yeah. You know what? I think about stuff like that too, because I'm constantly talking to or being contacted by brand new people that have no idea who I am. And
sure.
You know, sometimes I think to myself, wait a second, how can you not know who I am? Like, not not from an egotistical standpoint, but I've been at this for so long, and yeah, you just kind of like assume that people know who you are, but that is definitely not the case. But yeah, my story just starts like everybody else. I had no family that got me started into reptiles. It was just a weird fascination. You know, the kid that was interested in dinosaurs and then insects, and it just kind of went on and on and on.
Sure.
And then caught my first snake when I think I was about 9 years old on a camping trip. And a couple camping trips later, you know, I was talking my mom and dad into letting me keep one. And that finally worked. And then it just kind of grew from there. The thing that really got me going was I started working at a local pet store when I was like 14 or 15. So that was like my first job. And then they just had a little bit of reptiles there. But I was able to go with the manager to California Zoological Supply. Mm-hmm. They used to buy their little, you know, like 3 box turtles, 2 green iguanas, you know, that kind of stuff for the little local shop. But I was able to go in there and then be exposed to all the radical stuff that was just tripping me out. And then, so I was getting animals from there too, but that kind of fueled the fire. And then I moved on to a real job, I guess you could say, when I was 18. And then that started to allow me to have more, financial backing you know, buy better stuff and cooler stuff and more stuff. And mm-hmm. it just kind of grew from there. So
very nice.
Yeah.
So what were some of your like initial animal interests? I know you said the first thing your parents or you, the first thing you talked your parents into letting you keep were snakes. Was that sort of like your first, like, I love snakes, I need to keep snakes. And then it blossomed from there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Garter snake. The second snake was a gopher snake that I got from the science class, that the, you know, break for summer school or a break for summer break rather. And then I was able to get that snake and care for it during the summer. And it ended up becoming mine permanently, you know. And then I think then I caught a rosy boa at some point, and I just started going from there. But I was never a super social kid growing up. So, you know, I was always looking at National Geographic, old ones over and over again, you know, like grandma's old stack of bookcase, going to the library, which I don't even think is a thing anymore, but I would, you know, I would be checking out books and studying things and where is this country and where is that country? And I lived through all of that stuff. You know, we didn't have the internet back then. So, you know, it was just all fascinating to me. And on top of that too, you know, when you're young and you don't have the means to travel and stuff like that, I was so fascinated, like, not only by the animals, but the places that those animals came from. And I wanted to know where they were. I wanted to see pictures. I wanted to see a map. I wanted to kind of orient myself with a globe and figure out where all this stuff was and how it all kind of plays into each other. And it was, yes, of course I love reptiles, but there's also that part where I remember many, many times where I would get an animal. I already knew where it came from because I already did all my research. And I knew what the environment looked like. And then I would make my little cage. And then I could just stare at that animal sitting in the cage and kind of daydream and try to imagine that animal in the wild. And in a way, it was kind of a way that it would take me to that place where that animal came from, kind of an escape, I guess. So,
sure.
You know, and now being much older and in a way better spot financially and everything, you know, and now look at all the travels that I have under my belt. And so now I'm doing that stuff, but yeah, it's still basic knowledge, you know, and understanding. And
sure,
the stuff that you learn with a young brain stays with you, you know, that becomes permanently etched in there. So yeah, I can remember seeing pictures of jungle and natives and all these kind of things. And, you know, now I can say I've seen a lot of that stuff in real life too, you know, so it's really cool to be able to kind of live out those dreams.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I mean, I remember as a kid, going to the library with my dad once a week. And again, it was sort of pre-internet abundant era. And yeah, doing exactly that, finding the books and just like, we got a couple hours to kill. Let's, you know, make something interesting out of it and doing the same thing, finding cool reptile books. So yeah, I can definitely relate to that, that little bit of escape that you need, especially as a kid. But yeah, you definitely have traveled a ton. And, you know, at this point, I'm just going to talk as if the listeners know who you are, because they should. Your YouTube channel, you travel, you do some sort of eco vlogs where you just show off sort of the landscape in these places. You also go look for animals, and you kind of just, you've been documenting some of these amazing adventures you have in your life. And I think a lot of people use that as sort of a similar escape. Like, we might not be able to keep mangroves, but we can certainly watch you find them in your videos or, you know, find these retics. And I think people get a lot of enjoyment out of that in the same way. So that's, you know, pretty amazing to see. So I think people really get a kick out of that. I know I personally do. So, but So you do the traveling stuff, you do your vlog. Would you consider that like now shifting towards ecotourism since you're looking to move that side of the world over there and you're not going to bring your collection with you?
Well, that was the plan, but now there is a plan to bring a collection with me.
Very nice.
And yeah, and a breeding facility and a lot of travel. I don't know how much time we're going to actually do tours. It was going to be sort of our main focus because I kind of got myself to the point where I was like, yeah, I'm going to have to relinquish this collection and kind of move on to the next chapter in life. But some things have changed, and I have some really interesting plans going on right now. So involves a facility, and it involves me bringing a bunch of my animals overseas, putting together more animals overseas. And I've got some new animals here with me now that no one's seen before that are going to be going over there as well. So,
wow.
Yeah, it evolved. It started changing about maybe a year and a half ago. And then the last trip, we kind of ironed out all the details, looking at facilities and that sort of thing. So it's come a long way. COVID has kind of screwed up some of the stuff, but not fully, because I still have another 10 weeks or so left that I have to fulfill at my current job before I can really do much. So I don't know what's going to happen as far as COVID, but
sure,
it might delay us a little bit, but it's okay. I mean, it's not that big a deal, because the expenses over there on property and stuff is not the same as it is here. So it's not like, you know, here all the businesses, not all the businesses, but a lot of businesses are going bankrupt because, you know, these mandatory closures and stuff. So over there, it's not a big deal for us not to be operational. It could go on for forever, really, and not be a big deal.
The
expenses aren't that big, but
that's good to hear. That's very encouraging. So, you know, regardless of the timeline, when you do make that jump over there and you do set up a facility, you'll be breeding, you'll be maintaining some of these projects that you've put your life's work into, essentially. And so, for one, that's really exciting for me to hear. I would hate to see a lot of that sort of get parceled out, even to the best of hands. It's really encouraging to hear that. But will you still then try to do any export to the United States or come back at all? Or are you thinking of working a market overseas?
Well, that also has been changing with all the stuff that this country has been going through the last 2 or 3 months. You know, my initial plan was to come back at least once per year for about 2 months or so, where I could have a shipment come back and we could ship it to ourselves, and then we could handle the distribution and all that ourselves. I don't know if I want to come back. I don't know if it's worth it to come back. I don't know, with all the things going on, and I don't want to, you know, turn this into a down or anything, but I'm not real impressed by what's going on here. So
of course,
I don't know if I even feel like it's worth it to come back, but
sure,
I can certainly, obviously the intention of the breeding facility is, the first part of it is going to be for my enjoyment, and secondary to that will be global exports. So there'll be markets in Europe. I think Europe will probably be a really big market, because I tried to sort of strategically pick and choose species that are desirable, not only here, but everywhere. So,
right,
you know, I guess when you're talking about rare stuff, it's going to be desirable anywhere, but I'm just excited to be able to continue on with some of these projects. And like I said, there's some projects that I haven't revealed yet. I will, you know, we're going to turn this thing, and I don't want to jinx it because there's a lot of things still up in the air as far as borders being open and laws and things always changing, but I want to bring it to YouTube. I want people to see all this stuff that we're doing. And even I want people to see some of the procedure and what it takes to export a shipment and then have a facility set up, you know, because it's not going to be easy.
Of course
not. I have a lot of experience, so it's not going to be as difficult for me as it probably would be for other people. But I just want people to see kind of, you know, I want people to be there with me and kind of experience it with me through the power of video and YouTube and that. So I think it's going to be interesting for people to watch. We share as much as we possibly can on YouTube already as it is. So, you know, giving people a look at, you know, farms and our travels and expos in other countries and all those different kind of things. We enjoy showing people stuff that's very unlike what most people show. And we just have the opportunity to put it out there. And so we're going to put it out there. You know, if I take my animals to a veterinarian to get a health check before I'm able to, you know, export them, you know, we might show that, you know, just different aspects of the industry that most people aren't even aware of.
That's really cool. I, for one, would definitely get a kick out of seeing that sort of stuff. That's the inner workings of all of that has always intrigued me. It's funny that, you know, we're talking about this. I just got off the phone with a friend out here whom you know, Alan, and we were just brainstorming, like, what's going to happen when Dan leaves? What are we going to do? Where are we going to get all these cool animals? And Alan's like, there's a space in my warehouse opening up right next to mine. We can always talk. So, so if you ever need a hub, you know what I mean? Sacramento Air has a Delta Dash 15 minutes from us. But, no, yeah, I mean, cause he and I talk all the time. He's local to me. And one of the things that I tell anybody, you know, when we bring up the subject about your channel and you moving overseas is like, if that were to then result in you not being at shows, what a loss to the Southern California, show scene, because you do, as you said, bring a lot of unique and interesting animals that stand out and catch people's attention and are very wonderful to see and something you don't necessarily see every day. And I personally always would get enjoyment out of being at a show where your table was there, I know, and I would go get to, you know, look at some stuff that's different and refreshing and wonderfully unique. And so, yeah, we were just kind of like talking about how the future would be lacking without a little bit of the DM Exotics uniqueness going on in there. So,
yeah, well, a lot of people are really happy to see me leaving, but the other part of that is that those same people are going to be really bothered when they see what we're up to.
Sure.
So that, for me, that's fun because I never really take this that serious compared to what these other knuckleheads are doing. but for me it's fun. You know, I try not to get too serious about stuff to the point where it's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's got to be fun, man. It's what you do in your time off of work. It better be worth your time, you know? So if you're not enjoying it, there's no point.
Yeah, and it is, of course, a ton of work. But
sure.
But the thing is that there has to be some enjoyment in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So,
absolutely.
And it, you know, you can make it, you can make the workload as much as you want or as little as you want. And I'm a hard worker And, you know, if I'm already doing something, I may as well just go all the way with it. So
sure.
We take on a lot.
Well, you do it well. I'll be the first one to tell you that, you know, anytime people ask and look for recommendations, I send them your way if at all applicable, because I've never had an animal that wasn't perfect from you. I've never heard a bad thing about you from other folks. Everybody is equally as impressed and satisfied. And I think your work ethic speaks for itself in the product you put out, as far as your YouTube channel, your animals, all that stuff. I apologize for the noise in the background. My Savannah monitor is just going a little nuts seeing me sitting here. So if you hear scratching at the glass, that's him. But yeah, no, you do amazing stuff, man. And anybody who takes enjoyment out of seeing you leave the United States market is on the losing side of history, as far as I'm concerned. So I wouldn't lose any sleep over that, but I know you're not. So
yeah, well, the thing is we're not leaving the market, I guess, because we're planning on basically doing global exports. And that doesn't, despite my personal feelings about me returning or me and my wife returning to this country, whether we do or whether we don't, it doesn't mean that we're like going to blackball the U.S. from our exports or products. They're still going to, you know, that stuff is all going to still be coming over here. It just, you know, we thought that we may be coming back. At first, it started with like, we should come back for the big reptile super show in January. And then, I don't know. And then going through all this lockdown and missing all these shows, it just reminded me that we don't need to do any shows. We really have never had a need to do shows.
Sure.
The online sales and local sales and our name has been around for so long that we easily sell everything without any expo, without going through all of that. We sort of just did that just to make an appearance and be part of,
course,
you know, the reptile thing. But, you know, I would actually like turn sales away leading up to a show just so I could have like a really cool table. But
right,
that's kind of dumb. From a business standpoint, you know, be taking all the sales as they come, you know, take, you know, as people hit you up and they want to buy, and it's dumb to tell them, you know, well, contact me after next weekend and we'll see what's left.
Right.
So we did that for so long, and now, you know, we haven't done that now. And so it's kind of just a little reminder where it's like, don't really need the shows, but you know, we were going to come back for the big show, and then that is the best time of the year overseas because it's not that hot. It's a really pleasant time of the year. So we would be giving up the best weather of the year to be here for an expo. And so we kind of came off of that idea, and then we were like, well, what if we come back for the July and August show? You know, and then we're like, oh, yeah, well, maybe that's possible. And now I'm just like, you know what, let's come back when it's the hottest time of the year over there. So like, let's just come back in like March and April. We can ship, you know, if the weather's like, it's kind of the shoulder season, we're able to ship anywhere across the country and that sort of thing. So I think if we come back, it's probably pretty likely that it'll be that time of year, but
sure,
I don't know. And like I said, we may not come back and just kind of stay over there. And I don't know. I'm not sure. But we have so many. Our network is pretty big. So
absolutely.
If people want something, you know, if I'm sending a formal export to one of my importers here in the U.S. and I say, hey, there's going to be, you know, X, Y, and Z in the box, and I need you to hold those. They're going to get picked up by, you know, Riley or whatever. And then, you know, we can always do stuff like that.
Yeah. Too.
It's not a big deal. Or people can consolidate, you know, everybody can place, you know, an order together and just one guy is the importer. And, you know, that's the way the Europeans do it much of the time. So there's a lot of things that can be worked out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like something that you, Alan, and I should talk about in the future as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, anything's possible.
Yeah.
Normally with importing too, like, you want your values to be up pretty high on the animals just to justify the cost. But
of course,
to be honest with you, a lot of stuff that we're going to be working on are high-end animals anyway. So it'll be pretty easy to reach that threshold if you're taking some of the real rare stuff, you know, mixed with whatever you might need and this pet store might need and this distributor might need, you know, and these sorts of things. And I think you could reach that threshold quite fast.
Oh, absolutely. Especially with your reputation. I mean, there would, if somebody was running a shop and they're like, I need to get some animals from, you know, a normal supplier, and they have the option of going with Joe Schmo and Dan Mullary with his years of experience and stellar reputation and the fact that, you know, he puts it all out there authentically, I think people would happily pay for whatever, you know, that is. Like, 'cause it's kind of like that peace of mind knowing that the quality is there because of the reputation behind the individual. I think that's why a lot of folks really appreciate what you do, because you put your name behind everything that you do. And so, yeah, I mean, if I were in that position, I would absolutely think that, you know, going the extra route or paying the extra dollar or whatever for the higher end stuff coming from you would be well worth the investment as opposed to anything else. So yeah, I don't see you having any trouble with that, on that end in the future, should you go that route. But
no, I don't either. And it's not only the animals, like the reputation of getting decent animals, but it's more the reputation of a guy that's not going to just take your money and
skip
out.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's the biggest risk with importing, is are you going to see anything after you hit send wire on your online bank account? You know, that sucker's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone. Like, you have zero recourse. There's no way you're going to ever get any of that money back. So those are the pluses, you know, because, I already have a lot of people all around the world from many, many different countries that are excited, you know, and it's also people that have been asking for rare, very rare things that you probably are not going to find anywhere else. And I, you know, haven't been sending those to Europe or whatever. And some of the stuff I haven't been selling at all. So there's a lot of people that are kind of excited about, you know, that opening up a little bit to everybody. So
sure. Yeah. So that's a great prospect.
We'll see. Yeah. I just have to be cautious on how much I put it out there. Like, I realize we're doing a podcast, and I realize that, you know, it could potentially be listened to by, you know, who knows how many people, but it's just something that's happening. And so I'm not, you know, you learn every day on social media, at least, well, a lot of people don't learn, but you just, you know, you shouldn't run your mouth at every single thing that's going on, good or bad. You know, you don't want to talk about your relationship falling apart and then the very next day everything's good and you've already posted all this nonsense. And, you know, it's good to keep your mouth shut about stuff. So yeah, that stuff is happening, but, you know, I don't have a new logo. I'm not advertising and, you know, wait till you see this, you know, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's all, there's, you know, there's already a lease signed and all sorts of stuff going on, but, you know, there's a lot of things that could happen between now and then. So it's just, that's what we're working on, and we'll see. You know, there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes. So if you have a lot of time to run your mouth about something, you're probably not doing a whole lot of work behind it. So I just figure, just keep my mouth shut and just keep working towards it. And, you know, we're waiting on a prototype of a cage that's being manufactured in China. We're waiting for the prototype so we can, you know, go ahead with the manufacture, you know, of a whole bunch of those new cages for us. And like, there's a lot of stuff going on. But you know, I don't need to post a picture of the prototype, you know, the second I get it and go, look at the new cage we've developed. And, you know, like, so what? You know, just wait. You know, just wait until you'll see it. Don't worry. You know, I show so much stuff on YouTube anyway that a lot of people are like, I can't believe he's showing that and showing this. And so I'll show stuff, you know, because I'm about showing people things that, you know, they might be inspired by or learn something from.
Sure.
You know, sure. I'm not going to do a crying video on YouTube because I want views. Like I'm just going to put stuff out there that people might get something out of, you know, and I'm not going to do all that shock and awe stuff.
That's the perfect way to do it. I agree. I love all the stuff you put out there. So I think you do that quite well.
Sooner rather than later.
Very authentic.
But the COVID thing, that'll be the deciding factor.
Oh, did I lose you? Did I lose you? Are you there?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay, cool. So one of the things I wanted to ask is, how did you specifically wind up getting into the import-export side of things? Was it just because you had an authentic taste and you just couldn't get it any other way? I've watched, I think you put out a video last year about sort of how you came about and your original name being like Ophidian Affliction or something like that.
Yeah.
and I love that. It was classy. It was brilliant. Like it gave the viewer so much insight into who you are. So I know you've been keeping and breeding and involved, but like, when did you decide to like get into the import and export side of things?
So without sounding egotistical at all, I don't mean this in any way derogatory towards anybody that's in this hobby, but you know, you have people that keep snakes and you have people that are willing to really get at it. And I'm just one of those very few people that was willing to really get down with this thing. And yeah, I realize there's heavy hitters that have facilities with, you know, 29 freedom breeder racks full of ball pythons, whatever. Okay, fine. Those guys are serious about what they're doing. I just went full on crazy. I wanted animals that I couldn't put my hands on here. And I reached out to people. Nobody would help. You know, who can I contact overseas? How can I import? How can I do this? Who can I call? Who can I contact? All these things. Nobody said a word. And I get those questions all the time. And I actually help people. I tell them how to do stuff. And I try to provide them the answer to some of the most basic questions on it, at least to where they can kind of get started if that's what they want to do. But I had to do it completely on my own. So I bought a plane ticket to Thailand and I just started hitting animal markets by myself. Would I do that now? Hell no. In looking back at what I did by myself, that was completely insane. And very dangerous, but I did it. And sometimes when you're that passionate about something and you're that motivated and fueled by the idea, you know, I just did it. I didn't care. I didn't care what happened. I was after something. And so, I mean, it took me a lot of trips, a lot of flights. I had never been to Asia, first time to Asia. And I'm, you know, I'm just trying to figure things out. And it was rough. You know, I had some really crazy things happen to me. And I'm maintaining my job while I'm doing all this. So I basically, every single time off, like a block of time off that I could get, I was jumping on a plane and I was going overseas. And I was working on this really, really hard. And, you know, some failed attempts in the beginning, not, you know, it's usually not perfect. And through trial and error, I finally figured everything out. And it took a lot of work, and it took a lot of meeting a lot of people, a lot of dead ends. And I don't know. The podcast would be hours and hours if I got into all the details of all that stuff. But
sure,
it was. When I look back on what I did, I still just, I can't believe that I did that. But it is what it is, you know? So yeah. I feel like that really sets me apart from the average person that keeps reptiles. Because, you know, okay, so what? So you spend a bunch of money on freedom breeder cages and you filled it with ball pythons, like, okay, that's cool. But, you know, I went back and forth to Southeast Asia like 30 something times before I finally found my little handful of really solid, good exporters, you know, and that I'm still doing business with now, even after like 13 years.
Right.
And one of them is I'm partnering with for that big project that we've already been talking about.
Sure. Sure.
So these things have evolved over the years, and, you know, and it takes a lot of time to build trust like that.
Yeah.
I think the person that I'm partnering with overseas is probably the most trustworthy person that I know in this whole reptile thing anywhere, is that guy that I met overseas on you know, one of my trips. And so,
and that's a big statement. That's a big statement. That's important.
That's my partner. And I trust him, you know, 1,000%. So, you know, that's pretty cool. So then, you know, now when I look back at all those things that messes and headaches that I got myself into on all those trips back and forth and all that, it's, you know, it's still evolving. It's still growing into this gigantic thing. I mean, my business is it's already kind of international, but it's going to be international for real, you know, soon as we put this sucker together. So yeah, it's cool. It's cool. You know,
that's awesome.
And I don't walk around like all, you know, with a giant egotistical, you know, attitude, but I hold it inside, you know? And so when I got that guy at my table telling me a bunch of BS that I know, you know, after like 5 seconds of the dude opening his mouth, I know he's full of crap. And I'm just holding all that stuff to my heart, you know, inside. And I'm just like, you have no idea. You have no idea of the blood, sweat, and tears that I went through, or who I am, or where I'm at in this, you know, in this, in the hierarchy of things, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I don't make that known to everybody, but it's something that I'm very, very proud of. And, even my wife, Apple, like, she wasn't there for all of that, but she was there kind of in the middle of it when it started getting like real serious, to the point where I was starting to meet the people that I'm now currently involved in, you know, like she was there. So she saw a lot of it as well, even though she didn't understand a lot of it. She was just kind of there. But, and she, you know, she's such an awesome part of my life where she reminds me often, you know, where it's like, you know, look what you did. Like, look what you've built. Like, it's, nobody's done that. Nobody can do that, she says. I don't even know if she means it in that exact English, but that's what she says. She's like, nobody can do that.
She's dead on in my book. I mean,
yeah.
Truly, there is nobody else who can hold the candle to you.
Anybody can do it, really. It's just, are they willing to do it? And also too, if you wind the clock back 15, you know, like 2003 was my very first trip overseas. So, is it possible to do that now? I don't know, because things were a lot different back then, because
sure,
we didn't just rely on the internet and an email address and a, you know, hey, can you send me your price list? You know, and you just launch, you know, you go on Trade Boss or whatever, and you just ask for a price list or something. You know, it wasn't like that back then. You had to actually, you know, like now, you know, when you do deals online, it's like nobody wants to talk on the phone. And I find myself sometimes kind of being that way. I don't have a problem talking to people on the phone, but everybody wants to talk through instant messenger, text, you know, Facebook Messenger. It's just easier. It's not personal. You just launch messages back and forth and do your little deals. But back then, you know, you had to go meet people, like face to face. Like, you had to go meet with people. And if you were an idiot, or if you were offensive in any way, or somebody that looked like they could step all over you or take advantage of you, like, you weren't going to get anywhere, you know? So you had to, there was a whole human side to it that I don't think is really around anymore. But that was a big part of it, you know? And I'm not like master of socializing or anything like that, but, you know, I've spent a lot of years doing what I do for work, and it's allowed me to posture and read people's expressions and their body language. And I could tell when maybe what I was saying wasn't getting through, or wasn't enticing enough, or interesting enough, or whatever. And I just kind of through all those years of experience, I kind of feel like I had a really good grasp on how to show somebody respect and be firm when I need to, and back off when I need to. And like, those are all real important things, especially when you're dealing with people that are not American. Mm-hmm. You need to kind of really be on your game, because, you know, you could be doing just something that is so minuscule, but it's really offensive, you know? And so I don't know, there was a human side to it, and somehow I got it right. And that, you know, it earned me a lot of friendships, and then a lot of perks with business followed with that. So, and then Apple and I together, she's just like me, except she's, you know, she's from there. So she can even go further with the mannerisms and all of that stuff. So we work together really well when we meet people. And it's not like we're, you know, trying to dupe people and
right,
be disingenuous and that sort of stuff. But just like when we meet people, we just very sincere, very respectful, and we just make friends like everywhere we go, and people like us, they remember us. And so it opens a lot of doors. And so just, you know, shooting an email, you know, from, you know, Dabs All Day 69 at yahoo.com asking for a price list, like, you know what I mean? That's, who yeah. is that? What is that? You know, like, you've already said a mouthful just by the name of your email address,
yeah.
you know? So it's just a lot of that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
meeting people face to face is a big deal. And so we've earned a lot of respect through that way. And it just evolved into some gigantic thing. I think about it every single day. I trip out on it every single day. I reflect back and just go, oh man, I can't believe where we're at. I can't believe the level of sales. I can't believe how many people don't like us. I can't believe how many people do like us. How many people watch us? How many people are jealous of us? How many people are going to be jealous of us? Like, it just, you know, it's, we've evolved into a pretty massive thing. And I just trip out on it every day, very humble. And I never forget that. And I kind of just recognize all this stuff all the time, every single time. I'm just like, man, I can't believe it. You know, I just got an yeah. email. Somebody's, you know, asking me if, you know, if I have this available, and I do, you know, every day. I just like, I trip out on that. I don't post ads anymore. People just come to me and it's awesome. It's super cool.
That's the best. I mean, what other vote of confidence do you need? If like your respect and your work ethic does all the legwork for you like that, that's amazing. That's the best right there. I mean, hats off to you. Like, seriously, no joke. You do it better than anyone else. So, you deserve it, man. It's really cool to see. I personally really, really enjoy seeing every video you put out, coming by, saying hi to you and Apple at every show. Like, y'all have always taken good care of me, always been wonderfully respectful to everybody. And it's just, it shows, it speaks for itself, you know? And I think that's a contagious thing that people really gravitate towards. And, you know, just by you being who you are and Apple being such a great, addition to your dynamic, it's perfect. You guys do things better than anybody else could. So it's really neat to see and watch. And when you bring us along on the journey on your YouTube, it's really like, it's really exciting. I think people really get a kick out of it. So I personally really enjoy it. But speaking of the YouTube thing, one of the things that I noticed in your spot in Long Beach currently is that when you are bringing in all these various animals, now I know some of them go to customers and shops and things like that, but you do bring quite a few things into your place. And you know, from that one angle into your reptile room where you've got like the cages on your right with all your pitayas and things, and then there's the back room and then the wall on the left. I've seen those things change a little bit. Am I correct in assuming that you have that set up to sort of be interchangeable and accommodate different tank or tub styles based on the animals you're bringing in?
It's changed and evolved, and there's two other rooms that I don't film in that often just because they don't have that commercial look to them. You know, I film more so in that one main room just because it looks longer and the lines and the color scheme. And so it just looks more professional, I guess, in my opinion. But I have a couple other rooms that are kind of, no, I don't want to say slapped together, but they're just not, they just don't have that same look to them. Mm-hmm. But I'm doing most things are all modular and commercial, lots of the old school tubs in many different sizes and racks and things just because they're super functional. But I feel that we can accommodate just about anything with the caging and the racks and different stuff that we have going on here. Very functional. Like in one of my rooms, it's all baby racks. You know, I think I think we have about 160 like baby tubs.
Okay.
You know, you know, that's obviously, I spend a lot of time in there with those babies because it's a lot of boiga and little stuff that needs lots of attention when it comes to feeding and that. So I'm in there a lot, but, no, we can accommodate everything. We're not moving and interchanging cages because it's a lot of work to move cages around once they're all
right,
wired up and all that. But yeah, we used to have really big cages, when we had bigger constrictors and that sort of thing, but I could see the writing on the wall with that. Southern California, we're completely oversaturated with retics and all that stuff down here. So
oh, yes.
I just moved away from all that stuff. And then I decided to do a cage change. And because I kind of knew where I was in the timeline of things, I could have invested a lot of money in a whole bunch of real expensive cages. And then I just thought, nah, I don't have enough time left to really justify the investment of, you know, I just need some cages to get me by, you know, X amount of years or whatever. So I just needed the dimensions were the most important thing that I could maximize, you know, how many units I could put on a wall or whatever. So, yeah, but it's old school, you know, I came up with all that, all those Sanmar racks. Like that's from here, you know, Sanmar, that's a Southern California thing. So all those racks, that's what I've pretty much always used. And I never got into the Freedom Breeder stuff. Some of the design for me, I just didn't like it, and it was very expensive investment. And it was just more functional for me. I was familiar with the tubs and the racks and stuff, and that's just what I ended up sticking with. It will probably be different overseas because we won't, you know, we don't have a lot of the stuff we have to come up with on our own. So I won't be able to just, you know, order some cages or whatever. So, but I know what works. I know the basic, you know, the basic principles and all that kind of thing. So no, it's pretty good. And then plus right now, well, not right. Well, right now my collection is very, very manageable because I've sold off a lot of things that I never even thought that I would be selling off stuff. But essentially, I've gotten rid of almost all of my CITES animals. So that means the boas, the pythons, like almost all of that stuff is gone.
Wow.
So now my collection is getting smaller, and it's still big by the average person's standards, you know, but I think we'll be shipping probably, actually Apple and I, on the way home from FedEx yesterday, we were kind of trying to get a tally, a rough estimate of how many animals we're going to be sending overseas. And it came to about 90 or 95 animals that we're sending overseas from adult breeders, you know, all the way down to some baby stuff. So, our collection is that right now, plus just a few things left that are not going to go overseas that we're going to sell or send out on breeding loan, actually, also.
Sure.
I think the only thing that's left is like, I think just a few green tree pythons. And I think pretty much everything else is, aside from, I mean, then mentally when I'm working through it, there's animals that I'm not taking overseas that are going to be sold, you know, that are here. They're surplus animals that are, I don't really count those because they're surplus, you know.
Sure.
So we have some baby cyanea and some baby mangroves and things like that are, you know, those will all be sold off. But yeah, so I'm not counting those. But no, it's actually really nice right now because, you know, we're kind of almost like self-quarantining now because I just don't feel like going out in group. Well, that's not my thing anyway, so I'm not really feeling like I'm missing anything. But but I'm enjoying being home more because I have less animals to take care of. And I'm just tinkering around with stuff that I'm not going to have to sell off. You know, like these are animals, like I'm getting them ready for breeding, even though the breeding's not going to take place here.
Yeah.
But I'm getting stuff ready for breeding, cycling. Well, not really cycling, but I'm, you know, like food-wise, I'm getting animals, you know, big and fat and just getting everything ready. So it's cool. Because I can continue sort of like putting my heart and soul and stuff, but there's a reason for it, you know?
Right.
And it's, yeah, so.
Do you find any particular challenges in keeping the various species you do, especially when you're considering when you have like a full collection at the time, like say right after an import shipment or two? Is it challenging to sort of maintain that, or by virtue of having multiple rooms, does that sort of make that a little bit easier?
It's just the sheer volume. When we import a lot, but the majority of it is already going directly to the people that ordered it. So when you have a lot of animals and it's, you know, and you don't have a team, a bunch of employees and stuff. And I forgot to mention, overseas, I'm going to have a couple employees full time. So that's going to make things really nice.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. But here, no, I mean, it's just us. And so we find ourselves doing a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that does is kind of, it takes away from us being super attentive when it comes to, like, I'll give you an example. I put some green tree pythons together for breeding back in February and into March a little bit. And, you know, I had shipments coming in and out. So there, I did see some breeding, and I'm still like going and I'm looking at stuff and I'm making notes and that sort of thing. But my attention was a lot on getting things established, shipping, collecting payments, and all that normal customer business related kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all of a sudden, like 4 weeks ago, I look at, you know, I'm noticing that one of the green tree pythons is refusing food, one of the females. And I'm like, yeah, well, I don't know. It's been quite a while. I'm not sure. Maybe something's wrong with her. I don't know, because a good eater going off food. But now I'm kind of paying attention, you know. And then all of a sudden, oh, she's grounded. This, okay, let me pull the water bowl. This is looking weird. And you know what? Let me throw a nest box in there or whatever. And then, boom, you know, there's eggs.
So, oh, wow.
So, like, if I had a lot less animals to deal with, I would be really on top of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, if I wanted to, like, if I was a full-on, like, Facebook guy or whatever, I would be that guy posting a picture of ovulation and this and that and posting every single photo of every little mannerism and everything that I see. But I wouldn't do that anyway, but I missed a lot of that stuff because I have just so many things to watch for. Sure. And so, you know, so sometimes you miss stuff like that, but having less animals allows you to really be on it. And that's, you know, that's really important. I've said this many times. You know, I was told by Gary Sipperly, one of the old school guys down mm-hmm. here in California. And, you know, he basically told me, your animals will tell you what's going on. You just have to be paying attention.
Sure.
You know, you just have to be paying attention. So when you have a lot of animals, it's tough to pay attention. But if you, you know, if you have a snake that always sits in this one spot, and then all of a sudden, after months and months, for some reason, it's sitting in the opposite spot. And it's like, you know what? There's something going on here, because that's not where that animal likes to sit. You know, maybe your heat pad is out, or maybe your light bulb is burned out, or maybe it's something like that, or maybe it's starting to cycle. Maybe it needs a mate, you know, whatever. There's so many things. So you just have to pay attention to the little details like that. And it's true, you know, your animals do, you know, they tell you through their actions what's going
sure.
on.
Sure. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. But you have to be paying attention, you know, and when you're working, you know, if you have a full-time job and you're not always able to, you know, creep around with your camera and take photos and all this other stuff, it's tough. You know, you do miss stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So
I feel that. I'm in here, you know, plenty, and I still miss stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, of course. We all do.
Yeah, definitely. So you're moving to Thailand. The house is pretty much done, other than some nuts and bolts and figuring out the facility. What are you most excited for and looking forward to in your move over there?
I just can't wait for a total change in lifestyle. Everything. Environment, everything. I want out of here so bad. I'm so tired of work. I'm tired of everything. I want to unplug from social media. Social media right now is straight poison.
Yeah.
And I have to be on it to follow certain things. And, you know, like that law that just got passed in Florida that went into effect today. I have to know that stuff because I ship to Florida, you know, so I need to be on top of kind of what's going on over there. And I learned about all that stuff going on through Facebook, through
right.
people in Florida posting about it. I didn't learn about it today. I mean, I learned that it was passed, and I knew it was looming out there. But right. so I have to be on Facebook, you know, but there's just so much stuff that is, it's just straight poison. And of course it's not reptile related stuff. And I've learned over my time traveling that when I'm away from that, life is so nice. It's just, yep. It's a whole different life. Even now, like when I leave the house, and I just go out in public. If I go to the store, go to the supermarket, and it's like all the stuff that I see, all these weird videos and all these weird edited things, I'm experiencing none of it when I leave the house. And so when you could imagine when you leave the country, it's way more extreme.
For sure.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
And I'm just too much involved in stuff, whether it's through my regular job. You know, I have one of those jobs where I'm essential, and you know, and it's not because I'm a plumber, or you know, like I got a lot of overtime the last few weeks, and so you know, I get big doses of a lot of this stuff. And so when I leave the country, man, I'm telling you, life is just, it's a total 180. It's so nice. And I'm just looking forward to getting myself back to normal, even, you know, like I do a really good job about, you know, like keeping myself straight and my mindset and everything and, mm-hmm. and all that. But it's so much easier when you're not here. Like it feels like a science experiment sometimes. here. But
yeah,
you know, like you're in some petri dish and just festering or whatever. But when you leave the country, it's a whole nother thing, you know? Yeah. And even if I, even when I get in, even to the most remote parts, you know, like get to like West Papua, for example, you know, that's like one of my favorite places. And I can get way far out into the tiniest little village where all that people are doing is staring at me because they've never seen a white dude before or whatever, you know? And it's just like, life is so pure and people are actually good.
Yeah.
Like they're simple and they're good natured people. And it's like, you forget that exists, you know? And so that was a really long way to answer your question, but I'm just looking forward to just getting away from this. I need out of the rat race, like really, really bad.
Yeah. You know? I hear you.
It's coming really soon. I already signed all my retirement papers are already signed and submitted. I have an end date. And it's really, really close. And it's, you know, I'm just right there.
Dude,
but of course,
awesome.
The borders aren't open yet. So I feel like I'm going to be stuck here for a minute waiting for some borders to open so I can get out of here. But
sure.
But we'll see. But it's, you know, it's all right there. So I can't wait.
Light at the end of the tunnel, man. Your hard work's finally paid off, you know. Well, it's been paid off, but now you get to really enjoy it, you know. And I'm sure Apple's super excited for you to retire, because then she can have you all to herself and you guys can really do what you love, which is, like you just said, enjoying a peaceful existence around good people.
Yeah, definitely. And it's going to be hard work too, like what we're doing. Of course, like I said, I'm going to have a couple employees. And hopefully that whole plan comes together. But it's going to be a lot of work. Yeah, you know, exporting and breeding animals and supervising and doing all those things. But I do that now, but I'm juggling it with full-time employment. I always have. So I feel like you just want, like, so it's like, hold on a second. So you're saying all I have to do is just run that facility and do import export and free space, but I don't have to work like 50 hours a week at the same time. Oh, dude, that's easy. I got that. That's easy. And it's going to be an adjustment too, of course, you know, waking up every morning. I'm sure I'm going to be waking up every morning at 3:35. Like my alarm clock has been waking me up for I don't know how many years. I'm still going to be opening my eyes at 3:35 a.m. You know, it's going to take me a long time to kind of deprogram from all that stuff. But
sure.
But I won't lose the work ethic. The work ethic is there. That's, I feel like that's genetic.
That's just you. Yeah, that's just part of your personality. So
yeah.
Well, if there's anybody who deserves it, it's you, man. Like I've seen the work you put in over, you know, the last however many years. So you've been kicking ass. So I think you've earned it for sure. So
yeah, thanks.
Well, we've been just over an hour, and what I like to do is I like to just kind of end on some fun little five little questions, and some of them are relevant and some of them are not, because, you know, you're looking to maybe lighten the load and you're going to have the facility and you've kind of checked a lot of these things reptile related off your box. So we'll just go down these closing questions and then we'll kind of wind it up, and I'll let you get back to your life.
Yeah, cool.
So first one would be, who do you look up to most in the reptile world?
Ah, that's a good question. Two names come into mind, Dave Barker and Mark O'Shea. In the reptile world, I really admire all the actual work that they've done. Mark O'Shea, mostly for his work in the field. And he's dedicated a lot of time to Papua New Guinea. And so I rely a lot on his literature for, you know, gaining knowledge and that sort of thing. And then Dave Barker, of course, for his books and that, and just being like, you know, one of the old timers that's just done amazing work with reptiles. So
yeah,
I would say those two for sure.
Yeah. Both big pioneers in our field for sure.
Yeah.
Second question, what is your holy grail reptile to keep or work with? If there were such a thing. I mean, you've seen so many different animals. I'm sure that's probably harder for someone like you.
Oh my gosh. Well, here's the thing. I have been lucky the last few years to be able to have acquired some new animals for the hobby, for myself and for the hobby. And so that changes all the time, because all of a sudden I'll lay my eyes on something that I've never seen before. And that becomes my, you know, like that. I was aware of it. It was one of my holy grails, and then I have it. And so that's like, cause I make things a reality, you know, like I go out and I get it. I go and go get stuff, you know? So like I'm supposed to have a subspecies of beauty rat snake, hopefully showing up here this month. And so that's kind of a holy grail to me in a way, you know, that I've wanted to have. And there's a really good chance that I'll be seeing those later on this month. So that could be it this month, you know, but I put some animals in my racks last weekend that are blowing me away right now. So it's just, man, that's a tough one. It's not going to be your standard answer, you know, Boland's python or whatever.
I wouldn't expect it to be a standard answer from you.
Yeah, it like those things are all like, those are great, you know, but I find my holy grail animals are the animals that most people, that are not on most people's radar, yep, or people aren't aware of. They don't even know that they exist, you know, stuff like that. And if it did show up here, it wouldn't be something, it would be something that like 99% of the people at a reptile expo would just walk by it and go, oh, why is that thing so skinny? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but that would be my holy grail, because I know what it is, and I know how hard it is to get. I know where it comes from and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be like some morph whatever, you know?
Sure, sure. No, I wouldn't expect anything less from you. If you could devote an entire bedroom in your new house in Thailand to make it like a walk-in vivarium, what would you keep and what would you design it around?
We are actually,
oh boy,
this is going to be another crazy answer. In Thailand, we've decided that we are not going to keep any reptiles at our house. And I like hornbills and I like binturongs. So there is a really good chance that we may be building a huge, like, walk-in aviary.
What?
With horn. Yeah. Because, you know, over there you can build stuff for really cheap, labor cheap. So I was thinking like some kind of a, like a dome or something, you know, like a huge flight, like a big one. Like something you would walk through at the zoo or whatever. I'll think about putting something like that together.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be reptiles.
Yeah. Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, man. I mean, I've seen various species of like ground hornbills and some of the smaller species, the red bills. And of course the rhinoceros hornbills are amazing. Like they're some fascinating birds. So yeah, that's a really fascinating answer for sure. And then the binturongs are like the craziest looking things ever. Those like the teeth or the tusks or whatever growing right through the upper jaw. Like what?
Yeah. You know what the thing is that like with your background, you're familiar with all this stuff, but we also like, civet cats, but they say that the civet cat can be very tame and it can be a good pet. But if you leave it alone, like say you go on vacation or you travel or whatever, and you leave that animal alone for like a month or maybe 2 months, that animal will revert all the way back to like its wild state.
Wow.
And yeah, but they say that the binturong, you know, you raise them from a baby or whatever, that they will always be that way. They don't like go into a wild state. So like if you have one, you know, as your animal and then you leave for a month or two or whatever, when you come back, it's still the same animal when you left. It's
not,
it doesn't revert to some crazed, you know, wild animal again. So
yeah, it doesn't lose its socialization or anything overnight.
Yeah. Those are things that because we ask those questions when we travel.
Sure.
And we see people with these things and a lot of people, that was kind of so far the general consensus. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't know yet.
That's
I definitely don't want to tie myself down with animals at my house though. Cause I've been tied down my whole life with animals. So we'll see.
Binturongs. Yeah, that's a good one, man. I think you're right about those guys being more placid. If I recall, I've seen plenty of photos of keepers at various zoos sharing the space with them during training sessions and things without it being any concern. So yeah, I think you're right on that. Those are really cool, man. Those are very unique animals that I think anybody would get a kick out of seeing for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about their care, so I can't help you there, but I could find out.
Yeah.
I'm sure I could pull some strings and ask people like, how do you take care of them? So,
right.
Yeah. Who knows? 6 degrees of separation in zoos. It's a small community. So,
oh yeah, definitely. So.
Question 4, if you could go back in time to a younger version of yourself right before you were getting into reptiles, obviously that was a young age for you. What wisdom would you impart upon your younger self?
The only thing that I can come up with that is that when I was young, I was into getting one of everything. And it took me a while to learn that you should have a pair of everything.
Yeah.
One of everything. So, you know, but back in those days, I think we were all doing that. You know, it wasn't so much breeding. It was just people just had, they just kept animals. They just kept reptiles.
Yeah.
So I think we were all like that back, at least people that are, you know, my age is when we were keeping way back when. It definitely was not a pair of this, a pair of that. It was just one of these, one of those, one of those. And then I learned by accident about that pair thing because I had a boa constrictor that I bought from the pet store that I was working at. I bought it before I started working there. So I was about 13 or something. And it was a female. And then my manager at the shop, after I had already started working there, goes, "Hey, I have this male." And then I put them together, and like I bred boas by accident when I was like 15 years old. And then that was it. I was like, "Oh, dude, I need pairs of everything. I'm gonna be breeding everything."
Yeah.
But that was in you know, that was in, let's see, when I was 15, that was 1985, you know, so there weren't a lot of people breeding anything in 1985, yeah. Only like corn snakes and king snakes and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Man.
But anyway, yeah.
What a time. It's like, yep. if only you knew what you know now back then, right?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
The things that I think all of us have been in this for a little while, you know, just all the things that I had access to back in those days. Oh my
yeah. God. Yeah. It's crazy how things have changed for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then my last question before we let you go is, if you could pass on one piece of advice to the listeners about keeping snakes or reptiles in general, what would it be?
That is a question that I've been given often, and I almost always answer it the same way. Keep what you like. Don't keep what everybody else likes just to be one of the guys. Just have some balls and like, just keep what you like. It doesn't have to be, you know, because this guy has a cool logo and he has, you know, he passes out baseball caps because he's a ball python breeder. So I want to fit in with that guy. So I want to do ball pythons. Dude, there's so many reptiles out there. Go for the one that you like. If you like ball pythons, then that's cool. Do ball pythons, but don't do it just because you want to fit into some in crowd. There are so many really, really cool reptiles out there, stuff that people don't breed, maybe stuff that people have never bred. And if you like it, if you're passionate about it and you think it's real interesting to you, just go do it and be different. You get good at something, you can make anything cool.
Yeah.
Who cares what other people think?
I mean, look at me. More.
Yeah. Look at me as an example, and I would have never have dreamed that I would be at this level of popularity, but you know, I never chased all that common stuff. The market burned itself out, kind of bouncing back a little bit now, you know, because there's newer people that are jumping into it. So, you know, those markets are still surviving, but I've always done all the weird stuff because that's what I like. I like all the weird things, and now the weird things are cool, you know. Yeah. So
as they should.
So there's a whole following now behind all the animals that I've always taken an interest in.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to fit in that bad to where I would only keep a certain animal just because I wanted to fit in with the mm-hmm. with the in crowd. You know, just keep yeah. whatever you like.
Yeah.
If what you like is what the in crowd likes too, and you know, and you like that, then go for it. But if not, nah. You won't be around very long if you force yourself to do something that you're just doing, you know, because everyone else is doing it. You won't follow through long enough to see it into anything. You got to do what you like.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I completely agree. I support that 100%. It's so true. Very true. Like, if there was anything anybody needed to hear, that's like, you got to hear that before you ever get going in anything. So for sure.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. That applies to everything in life, really. I mean, it's just good advice to have, you know. You got to be authentic and true to who you are and what you want and how you know, you get one shot at life. So might as well do it the way you want, right? So
that's it.
Yeah, man. Well, I appreciate you spending some of your precious time speaking with me tonight. I know there's a lot of folks who have been really chomping at the bit to have me pull this interview off and get you on here. I'm not the only one who thinks highly of you. Like we've been talking, you know, there's a lot of people who are big fans of yours. So I really, really think people are going to get a kick out of this. So I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule, out of your work life, out of your animal life. You know, thank you, Apple, for letting you devote some more time to something else today, because I know, you know, your time is divided so many ways, and she's absolutely a huge supporter and a backbone in everything you do. So I couldn't thank you for taking time out without also thanking her, because I know she pulls a lot of the weight for you as well. So
yeah, awesome. You're welcome. And you know what? Somebody needs to be thinking about doing some kind of video interview from overseas when I'm over there.
You know? Well, I'll tell you what, there's a new beta video thing going on with this exact software we're using. So it is becoming much more of a thing. Like Zoom meetings are big, video interviews, like Joe from the ground up, he does a lot of interview stuff, but he does it sort of live on YouTube, I think.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of platforms that now make that happen. And what I've been seeing is a lot of folks showing off animals that they're talking about in discussion. So the people who tune into the video actually get that sort of added layer of content by visually seeing what they're talking about or showing off the room or whatever it is. And it's really neat. So I actually would like to incorporate some of that in the future. So, you know, we'll definitely have to, like, once everything goes, you know, smoothly and you can get your facility up and running and you're over there, we'll definitely have to get you on to strut your stuff and show off everything that you've worked so hard to build. Cause I guarantee you, I would love to see it. And a lot of people would love to see that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. The only difference is it'll be a different time of day or night when we do it, but yeah, no, I mean, I think it'd be cool. I think it'd be really cool. Whether I'm sitting on the, you know, on the veranda or whatever, you know, I can even, you know, I can be taking like a live stream around the house and catching things and whatever, you know, people can really kind of get a feel for what.
Oh yeah. You'll definitely have to do that, especially if you get your binturongs and your hornbills up.
Yeah, right. Cool.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times people love stopping and watching a hornbill, like catching a grape when you're interacting with it or mudding up a nest or just flying across and seeing that, you know, they're such amazing birds. The behavior is fascinating. Binturongs, I mean, what isn't fascinating about that? So, yeah, man, you could really just keep your YouTube stuff going big with whatever you want and people would eat it up.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Well, I'll be watching 100% of the way. So whatever you do, just, yeah, keep doing you and being authentically yourself and people will keep sticking to it because I know that's what I appreciate the most out of it. So,
yep. Well, if it doesn't, I'm going to do a crying video.
All right. You heard it here first. Dan will do a crying video if nobody else supports his YouTube endeavors. All right, man. Well, I'm going to let you go here. We're going to get on out of here. Just keep your browser open so it can finalize the processing of the audio files and stuff when you hang up. But otherwise, you are free to go, my man. Thank you for spending some of your quality time with me this evening.
Yep, you got it, man. Take care.
All right. Take care, Dan. And everybody else who's listening, thank you for spending some time in the Reptile Room with us this evening. Whenever you're listening to this, I really appreciate the support. Please check us out on all of your big podcast platforms. Give us a 5-star rating. You know, leave us a review, all that good stuff. And we will catch you next time in the Reptile Room. Cheers. Thank you. We'll be right back.